Okay, excuse me. Welcome, welcome, welcome to this week's episode of Kuden Radio, right? The podcast for us, right? Martial artists, ninjutsu aficionados, self-defense people. I'm just taking these days to say modern day warrior protectors, which involves a whole lot more than just, I don't know, fighting techniques and winning trophies and earning belts and all that. But hey, people are going to do what people are going to do. Anyway, I heard a story a bunch of years ago, the Taikai, the yearly kind of thing. Hatsumi Sensei would go to different countries and whatnot, and came here to the States. I think it was the 2000 Taikai. You'd think I know this stuff because that's when I got my fifth Dan, but I don't know. That was decades ago. Anyway, but there was this story. I got it secondhand. Yabunaka was telling it because they were out with Hatsumi Sensei, and it was really freaking hot. I mean, it was really, really hot. And this thing happened to Hatsumi Sensei, actually, right? And he just kept on walking like nothing happened, right? And they, you know, they told him this thing happened, and he just said, "It's all right. I don't need it anyway." And just kept on going, right? So what the hell is this thing all about? Well, I'll tell you the story, and we'll jump into things that actually has to do with luck and fortune and all that kind of wonderful stuff, things that people tend to either dismiss or, I don't know, depend on it way too much. But anyway, we're going to talk about that and a bunch more during this episode of Kuden. So I'll talk to you just as soon as we get back. So, the big question is this. How are self-defense and success-minded people like us, concerned citizens worried about protecting ourselves, our loved ones, and the things we care about from the monsters we know exist in the world? How do we train in a way that gives us the skills, knowledge, and understanding we need without becoming paranoid fighters or killers ourselves, and yet still allows us to be the hero protector the world needs us to be? That's the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Jeffrey Miller, and welcome to Kuden Radio. Real training for real people in a real world. What the hell does luck have to do with being a warrior, a protector, martial artist, right? I mean, luck, aren't we supposed to, like, be that good, right? This is not about luck, right? Well, we'll talk about that here shortly. But before I do that, hopefully everybody will join us next week, right? Next Monday, Monday the 11th. If you're listening to this in the future, it's not going to matter. You might want to just go back and catch that. But next week is our 200th episode, right? Huge, huge benchmark. I've been told that if a podcast makes it to episode 25, they stand a chance. Because most podcasts, what is it, James? They don't get past like a first episode. It's just, yeah, number like one, right? And I'm chuckling, right? Because there's a lot of people that, like, you know, don't realize how difficult it is, or it's a good idea, right? They're interested in it. And maybe this will be a subject for a whole other, episode, but, you know, when we really want to do something and things aren't working, we have to ask ourselves, before we fall into luck or, I don't know, it was Satan's fault or whatever, sometimes we have to sit down and take a good hard look in the mirror and ask ourselves, are we interested in doing that thing or are we committed to making it happen? Because they're not the same, not even close, okay? And so several of my teachers have tested me on that. I've said I wanted to do something or whatever, and they said, oh, okay, I don't think so. What do you mean? You don't think so? Well, I don't think so. So, and then they would clarify, right? Is this something you're interested in doing, right? Is it something that you think it'd be cool or you think it would, you know, do something for you or whatever? Or is this something that you're absolutely committed to making happen? And then I didn't really understand the difference, but having had a martial arts school since 1989, having taught training groups nonstop, consistently, right, since my time in the military. So first training group was formed in what was then West Germany in 1984, 86, something like that, right? Does 2 years matter? Well, it might, except for folks who weren't born then. So, again, there's commitment, which means that if I fail, I will have died trying. Okay. Because commitment means you're going to do whatever to figure it out. You may fail multiple times, right? There's that Japanese phrase, which is actually a formula for success. Nanakorobi yaoki, right? Seven times down, eight times up. It's not about seven or eight, although the numbers seven and eight, since we're doing an episode here on luck, the numbers seven and eight are lucky in Japan, and it's not because of the way they're pronounced or whatever. The number four is the unlucky number, right? Here in the West, at least here in the States, the number 13 is unlucky. So you don't find a 13th floor in buildings, whatever, right? So, but the number four in Japan, anybody that's ever been to Japan, if you've ever taken notice, when you go to a store, if you were to buy a set of things, or even here in the States, right? You buy a sake set or whatever, teacups. Whatever, right? You're buying things in sets of one, two, three, and then I would say multiples, right? You can get, it's either going to be individuals or whatever, but you're never going to buy something in sets of four, okay? I've been gifted sake sets that have like two sake cups and the flask or the little pitcher, whatever, right? And I've been gifted ones with four teacups and then the flask, right? But that's not counted as a set of four. That set has five items in it. Okay. And the reason is because, the number four, you'd have to say she, right? She, you written with a different kanji, it means death. Okay. So there's, every culture has their little things like this, right? We have lucky rabbit's feet and people wear crucifixes and all kinds of things to denote a spiritual connection, seeking something from a different realm, right, to help them out and whatnot. Japanese have their things, right? So we'll talk about some of those during this one. But anyway, next week, I'm like jazzed about next week because I am lining up a panel, and these folks are not like superstars. I mean, they are in their own right to me. But they're not, I don't have Soke or, you know, whatever these guys lined up to be on. But I thought it'd be cool if I put together a panel of folks who have been around the art for a long time, right? And so these people are all connected to me, right, one way or the other. Some are the people I'm reaching out to. So I'm building the list at the moment. I have one confirmation at the moment, right? So some have become students, right? They were training, went away from training, came back, disappointed because shit changed a lot, right? Kept looking around, bumped into me, whatever. Other ones, some have been like, hopefully one of my guys, was my original student when I came back from the military and set up locally, right? And now he's teaching. He's a shidoshi in his own right. Some folks, you know, directly, indirectly. But like I said, what I thought would be cool to do would be to have kind of like this round table of some folks that have been around for a while. And but they're not just haven't been around or whatever. They're teaching. They're kind of passing things on as well, right? So just having a discussion about, you know, how things were, how they see things now, what's changed about their training, all those kind of things, right? Just to see, you know, maybe you can relate, maybe not, whatever. But that's the plan with that. So hopefully you'll make it on live because, oh, the other reason that I chose the group that I did, and hopefully all of them will be in, but even if I can get two or three of these folks, and then it's me and James. I mean, James has no sense of humor, but the rest of them, right, you can't see his face. Anyway, so the sense of humor is like all in the same ballpark, so it's not going to turn into a comedy roadshow or anything like that, but who knows. So anyway, so hopefully you'll make it for that. So that's March 11, 2024. So if you're listening to this again in the future, you're going to have to go back and find episode 200 because that's where it's going to be, right? But anyway, so it'll be cool. So anyway, before we jump into this and talk about luck and how the Japanese generally see it and how these kind of things work and the differences between the way we tend to engage with or approach this idea of luck here as opposed to in the East, and also some teachings from Hatsumi Sensei along the way and other master teachers, but primarily Soke and how my teacher kind of approach this and discuss things. Okay. And I'll continue on with that story that I started for anybody that was on before we had the intro run. So, but before we do that, James, we have anybody who's on? I mean, I see numbers going up, down, they don't go sideways, but anyway, who do we have on? There he is. Look at that. The first time you didn't usurp the whole
Jared and Dave both said good evening.
Good evening, good evening. Yeah. Long time no see. Dave was just on for a class tonight.
Dave said we need to get some of those cats waving their hands for the podcast.
Oh, the Maneki Neko? Good idea. Cool. Do I have any in my office here? I know I have some that are packed up. I had a set that got destroyed by the moving company after the fire. It was a set of the Maneki Neko. I think there were seven of them because that's the way they typically work. And then each was a different color. And each of the colors generally point to some aspect of life. I'm not going to go into them. This stuff's easy to look up, especially in that direction. But yeah, we'll discuss the cat because I put the cat on the slide, right? But I found a cool cat. Can I even bring that up? Yeah, I found a cool cat. Stop that. So, he's trying to be helpful. Found a cool cat here with the armor on. So anyway. Cool cat. I just had flashbacks to the 70s. I was just a kid in the 70s, but anyway, I know some of you guys are older and uglier than me, but anyway, it is what it is. It's like my NYPD polo shirt when we went to the 9/11 memorial when my wife and I were on a little jaunt, a little day trip here. I think it was last weekend. I'm much more a polo person than I am a t-shirt person. The only time you're going to see me in t-shirts is if I'm painting something or I'm wearing something that's just like, you know, gonna be trashed. Even when the family gets me things, right? Much to their chagrin, right? World's greatest grandpa, whatever. You know what? Everybody has those. They sell a lot of those. I'm just not a t-shirt person. The only time you're generally gonna see me in t-shirts is in the dojo, right? So, but I'm much more a polo person, but the polo that they had with the, NYPD, kind of thing just looked really cheap. And anyway, so which plays into something we're going to discuss tonight. Anyway, is that it? Just no?
They're the only two that have said anything so far.
All right, fine. Well, you know what? Anyone talk to everybody else anyway. All right, I know. I should just say, just kidding. I tend to engage with people who engage with me. With all the talking I do and all these things that I put out, you would think that I'm an extrovert, but I'm really not. When I get home and I'm done with these things, my wife has to pry things out of me. Why don't you talk? I talk for a living. I get tired of the sound of my own voice. Anyway, all right. So, let's see. Let's get back to that story. So, I think it was 2000. As I said, when we first started, you would think I would know this because it was when I got my took my Godon test. I didn't want to do that either, right? Because I had been successful in holding it off for a good number of years. So, why would you do that? It's fifth Don. Because I needed to believe that I had a certain level of ability and not just martial arts ability. Because my teacher and the teachers under him that I had along the way, right? I mean, I can say that to me since it's my teacher because I eventually rose to that point once you get Dai Shihan. Anyway, just this whole way things work. Anyway, there's a word in Japanese, shiso, right? Shiso is another word for teacher or mentor or guide, that kind of thing. But shiso is a teacher of life, right? And the number of lessons that I received, whether they were directly about here's how a warrior looks at things, or Hatsumi Sensei would be teaching on something and he'd say, this is not just Budo, this is life, right? This is all about life. And I mean, just over and over and over again, right? There's a certain aspect, and early on, right, in the way rank was given, well, not given, earned, especially initially when I was coming up through, and this carries over to the way I do things. There were three aspects of a student's growth that were looked at, right? One was obviously physical skills, right? Can you do the skills? Do you understand how things, you know, coordination, all that stuff is getting better, right? And then there was knowledge. It's a knowledge area, right? Do you understand strategy? Do you understand the tactical ideas? Are you gaining in knowledge so that it's harder and harder for people to blow smoke up your ass or to confuse you or to manipulate you or whatever, right? Are you doing that or and gaining more knowledge so that you can create more results? Not just in the dojo, right? And then there was a spirit slash heart section or aspect to training and to progress, right? And what that was the teachers were looking to see how or if or to what extent we were applying these lessons to our lives, to my life, to produce better results for growth, right? Creating better prosperity, those kind of things, right? Success. And, I know a lot of that has gone by the wayside because, the masses took over and the lessons seemed like they became more and more just about Budo Taijutsu, whatever. But Matsumi Sensei has always taught the same way, right? It's not his responsibility in the way people filter out the lessons. So, but this episode should, and what we're going to be talking about, should point in a direction that, one, it will touch on all three of these areas. But two, it's this kind of thing that's inescapable, right? That makes the whole life integration of what we're doing inescapable, right? And for those who do escape, you know how that works, right? They hit the back button or they whatever. They might have it still turned on, but they're scrolling on their phone, watching cat videos, or who knows, right? Because again, interest, commitment, right? I'm going to listen in, but look at all the distractions. Okay? We're going to talk about those as well. Anyway, so I started everything off with this story, and I got it second or third hand, right? So at the Atlanta Taikai in, I'm going to choose 2000. I think it was 2000. Really friggin' hot, right? And so Yamanaka was there because he was Hatsumi Sensei's favorite uke. Just beat the crap out of him. As a matter of fact, it was during that weekend. He pulled a punch and got beaten, right? Nagata Sensei was there, and Yamanaka Sensei was there with Hatsumi Sensei. They were the two that came with him. And so apparently they were out walking somewhere. I can't remember. And like I said, it was really, really hot. Like the sidewalk was so freaking hot that the shoes that Hatsumi Sensei was wearing, the heat from the sidewalk softened the soles of his shoe, and one of the soles came off. He literally walked out of his shoe, and he kept on walking like nothing ever happened, right? And either Yamanaka or Nagata Sensei bent down, picked up his shoe. It's okay. You dropped your shoe. And he just kind of waved it off and said, "That's all right. I didn't need it anyway," and just kept on walking. It's like, what the hell? Right. But he didn't miss a beat. Here's what he didn't do. He didn't piss and moan about the heat. He didn't piss and moan about, how the shoes are made and shit falls apart. And, now he's, got to find a replacement shoe or whatever. Right. And that story reminds me of one from even farther back. So that was a fortuitous weekend, I guess, right? Because I went and I tried dodging the fifth Dan test that weekend as well, except that my primary teacher at the time, Shoshi Malmstrom, Bud Malmstrom, was running that one. And the instructions were all people testing for fifth Dan need to bring their fourth Dan certificate and their membership card. And I can take mine. If I don't have it, can't test me. It's one of the requirements, right? So there was a reception Friday night, and I did my best to avoid my own teacher, right? But it was really cool because if anybody ever wonders why, like, these things are the cost that they are, at least when Bud and Bonnie Malmstrom ran these things, like, they didn't make money. They put on a freaking event, right? And so at the reception, they had a taiko group playing, right? So freaking Battlefield drums going, and it was just awesome. But anyway, bump into Shoshi Malmstrom, and we just start chatting, teacher-student kind of stuff. And I'm just steering the conversation, like, away from things. And just out of the blue, he goes, "And you brought your paperwork, right?" And I went, "I forgot." And he went, "I'm your teacher. I'm your paperwork." And I said, "Shit." But anyway, felt kind of lucky to be there, not because I tested and all that kind of stuff. It was just because there was other things that were going on. But here's this initiation of this lesson. But again, that was kind of a benchmark for fifth Dan, but way back, right? I had just gotten started with the training, and I was with Stephen Hayes at the time. And so we had these annual ninja festivals. And one I decided to go to, or I actually was able to arrange for leave from the military, all kinds of stuff, right? And so one Hatsumi Sensei was teaching at. And then there was another one that I was able to, like, make, just put the paperwork in. They kept telling me no, last minute, like it got approved that I could go. That was the first time I met Manaka Daishihan. This was a decade or more before he left and formed the Genicon, probably 2 decades. Anyway, so, but here was this other lesson that at the time, just, it didn't register until like this other lesson happened and I had this flashback to this thing. But anyway, so for those of you who have been doing our yearly ninja camps, you know that when I first started these things, wow, 2 decades ago? Holy shit, I'm old. Anyway, I arranged to make them very much like they were in the early days. So there are these camps, right? Camp Mount Luther, Camp Victory. We have these camps around us where they're used by Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts. They're used by organizations. Like there's one that just has these rotating camps, spring through fall, where it's a week at a time. So like Camp Dos is for DOSS, or Camp Dos is for kids with cancer. So they have a day camp for them all week long. And then there's another one where they bring in wheelchairs and all kinds of special aid kind of stuff for kids with spina bifida, right, which is a thing where there's basically a hole in your spine and they're crippled somehow and whatnot, right? So these kids still do archery. They still are in the pole. They say it's really, really cool. But the thing with these camps is that they have cabins and they have a main dining hall and stuff like that. So when I set these things up, we paid for meals, right? So they made 3 meals a day and we stayed there and had night stealth exercises and all kinds of stuff. As more and more people became teachers and more people were doing seminars and students had to pick and change, attendance started to dwindle and drop and those kind of things. It just became financially not viable, right? Sensei, we should do that. Well, great. If we did it now with the number of people that show up for these things, on average, I would have to quadruple the tuition. Still want to do it? Yeah, I know. Some say yes, but the bill has to be paid. And right, I started losing money to the tune of like $1,000 or more per event. Not cool. Right. So anyway, so we're at one of these camps, right? Camp Campbell Guard, I think. There was another one that we moved to afterwards, but anyway. So Hatsumi Sensei is there, and we're he's eating, and he gets seconds of some things, but other things, like what didn't register was like he tried everything and then he would just kind of move things to the side on his plate and he would just eat and he complimented the food. It was all good. It's very nice. It's very good. Right. Even though this was like scout camp food, right. Just went through things like it was just perfectly fine. And then, it was a good sense. Hey, you didn't eat everything. Oh, well that doesn't suit my palate. But this over here, this is good. I'm sure this is nutritious. It's just not my thing, right? Didn't complain about it being crap food. It's okay. How dare you feed me this? Whatever, right? He just tried things, moved things off to the side. No faces, no nothing, right? Just kind of did his thing. And I thought, wow. So this is not just, we're not talking about martial arts techniques. We're not talking about weapons. We're not talking, right? This is in the moment, right? This is, right? I can like the taste of something, not like the taste of something, move the things I don't want any more of, have this. Okay. Now I know if I'm still hungry, I'm going to get extras of the others. I don't need to condemn it, right? I like ribs, right? Every once in a while. And so we'll go to some place and they have, they'll have ribs on the menu. And, I don't really care where we go. I can always find something. And so I might order that. Okay. And then when it comes, right, I'm enjoying those ribs. Okay? And this is something that was reinforced in my Mikyo training with Reverend Jikai, that one of the big problems that causes suffering, discontent, dissatisfaction, and whatnot for folks is, for most people, is that they have a snapshot of things and they expect a rerun, right? Well, these things suck. These are terrible. Who said these were good ribs? Okay, did you plan to order this restaurant's ribs, or did you expect this restaurant to make your recipe or make the ones that, right? Or something was different today. Okay, but we wanted to live a memory. Okay, what the hell? Anyway, so the lessons that I've learned, right? And one of these lessons, as a matter of fact, it was a theme of several classes here or there. I think it was the theme of a Daikomyosai. Again, I was in an accident a bunch of years ago, and I've got a missing time period in my brain. So I have notes. And the cool thing about reading those notes, it's like I discovered new stuff. But there's things that aren't there because brain damage is a bitch. Anyway, so, but the theme or the topic was this on this idea of koun, right? K, long O, right? If you see it written, I think it's with the Hepburn system, using Romaji, our letters, it would be written KOU-UN. Sometimes you'll see it KO with a long dash over the top of the O, and then UN, but there's no hyphen or whatever. So just be flexible with the way things are converted, right? But koun, it's one way to say luck, one way to say lucky, that kind of thing. But there's like, I don't know, six or more ways to say or imply luck or lucky or someone who is experiencing one or the other in Japan, right? Fuku is another one. But koun, right? This idea, it can be translated as luck, fortune, prosperity, that kind of thing. Okay. And, in typical fashion, right? Here in the West, we tend to use the same word, but adjust it with other words or with prefixes or something like that. Like, you know, luck, or lucky, unlucky, right? Good luck, bad luck. In Japanese, they have different words. Sometimes it'll be conjugated with the akanai negative to the end of it, but typically it's a different word, right? But it's still what's different that I've noticed. And I'm not Japanese. I don't live there all the time. This is just my observations, my research. It's the way it's engaged with. And while there are lots of similarities, we'll talk about some of the symbols of luck. David mentioned one, this beckoning kitty, right? Generally speaking, what I've noticed in the West is people tend to engage with luck, good or bad, as from a concept of shit just happens, right? It just, you know, there's this randomness to things and it just happens, right? But in the East, in Japan, there is an element of responsibility and activity that goes with good luck or bad luck, right? And it's not that you have control of things, so to speak, but you still take action and you still control what you can control. Okay. So, this boils down to two main factors, right? There's the Buddhist or Mikyo concept of karma, cause and effect, universal principle, right? Of everything, right? Nothing comes into being that is not caused, okay? So while we could see making a wish and blowing out candles as, well, you never know. You're right. You never know. Okay. But if that's where your action is stopping, then I'm going to use a phrase. Good luck. Right. Okay. But it tends to stop there, right? From the Buddhist idea of karma. And I'm not going into all of this stuff. The folks that went through the 37 Fundamentals program and the First Seven Steps program know how much of a discussion we had about karma and direct and indirect karma, conditioning causes, secondary causes, all kinds of things, right? Four different types of effects. It's quite heavy, right? But what we tend to think of as luck in Mikyo, and again, this filters into the just everyday Japanese society, is that there were too many secondary or conditioning indirect causes coming together. I couldn't keep track of them all, right? They just happened to come together at the right time in the right place, and this thing happened. Okay? Good or bad, this thing happened, right? So they don't dismiss cause and effect, right? But people here tend to want to do that, right? I'm going to do scratch offs. I'm going to go buy lottery tickets. I'm going to whatever, right? Okay. You know, all those indirect causes may roll your number, right? But just flip the card over and see what the odds are. Okay. So it's people that tend to lean in that direction. It tends to not just be lottery cards or tickets or whatever. Okay. If you listen to the way they discuss things, I'll cross that bridge when I get there. I hope that doesn't happen. Right. Well, they will get lucky. Okay. But they're just choosing to ride it out. They're not taking any action. They're going to do what they want to do. They're not trying to manage things. They're not trying to set things up in a certain way. They're not on the lookout for anything. Just hedging their bets, right? It's not the same, right? So in the East, there's this, on one side, there's this idea of, not idea, there's this universal principle of cause and effect. Governs everything, right? We can't dismiss this. We can't ignore it. You can ignore it, but it's like gravity. You can ignore it, but if you slip, gravity's going to yank your happy ass down to the ground, and then your happy ass won't be so happy anymore, okay? So, or at least for a little while until your ass cheek's not bruised, right? So, and then the other side, the other kind of a balancing thing is more of a Shinto nature kind of thing where there's these cyclic kind of conditions that go on, right? The seasons. Okay. You can want things to be the way you want them all you want, but summer is going to turn into fall. It's going to turn into winter. It's going to turn into spring. It's going to create the dog days of winter between winter and spring. And that's when it rains like hell. It is around here anyway. And it may be different on your side of the planet because, right, everything's a little bit different, but there are these conditions that shift and change, right? There's a saying that strong men, people, create good times. Good times produce weak men or weak people. Weak men or weak people produce bad times. Bad times produce strong men. Strong men. So there's this cycle, right? It's the ebb and flow of things. There's all kinds of sayings about these things. There's all kinds of ways that we could look at it, right? You know, you can only, you know, miss class so often before it becomes the new habit. And now your new habit is you had to not go to class or not go to that seminar or whatever because something came up. Okay, great, right? And then maybe something doesn't come up, maybe, well, I guess I can miss this one because I want to do this thing over here. Okay, great. Well, how many times does that have to happen before the new habit is to fill in the time that used to be training time? Because, right? But in our head, no, I still train. No, you don't train. Okay? You do whatever, right? You allocate the time. Well, you don't understand. I do understand how it works. There's a whole year and a half that I didn't go to train with my teacher. Because I was in the military, had a family, money was in the tank, all that kind of stuff, and I get that. But I trained every goddamn day. Just because I didn't go to my teacher, just because I didn't go to a seminar, what I was remiss in is I didn't send letters to my teacher, because this was before the internet. I didn't stay in contact with my teacher and let him know what was going on. So the first seminar I got back to, man, I was like ecstatic. I was like, oh, all right, I made this happen. Here I am. Go up and I go, hey, you know, how you doing? He goes, oh, I thought you quit. Right? He didn't mean to punch me in the throat. It was just a feeling that I had, right? But there's that, right? So anyway, this idea from Hatsumi Sensei and these other teachers, right, between the way they were doing things and whatever. And for a lot of people, this doesn't seem like it involves luck. But let me share something with you. I jotted this down from my notes. In a class, it was in Japan, it's in my notes, right? Hatsumi Sensei said, you have to be the type of person that lucky things happen to. What the hell does that mean? Well, a lot of people are going to take that to mean I'm either lucky or I'm not. I was either born into it or I wasn't. Well, now we're talking about a cosmic conspiracy to either help or fuck over one individual out of billions, not counting other planets or the possibility of life anywhere, right? This entire universe has conspired to either help or hinder one individual. Well, that's a fucked up perspective, right? And if that's true, then how the hell are people changing their lives? How is that even possible? Because if it were true that this is my lot in life, then how do we account for all the other people that were born into certain conditions and made changes, significant, radical changes, right? It should be our lot in life, right? But it's easy to believe that something is whatever it is. But what did he mean by you have to be the type of person that lucky things happen to? Well, this points to stuff way beyond just kata and fighting skills and whatnot, but it has everything to do with the training, right? And this is true on the Budo side, just as much as it's true on the Mikyo side. Just on the Mikyo side, we tend to look at the life aspects more directly, and then we have to recognize how that shows up, right, in self-defense or what causes conflict and those kind of things, right? On the Budo side, we have to recognize, right, we're learning all this stuff about dealing with conflict, right? And then it's harder to see, well, shit, what caused that conflict to begin with, right? And did this person just pick a target? And if he did, what was his litmus test? And what is it about me that caused him to think that I was an easy target? See, this really starts to point at maybe something more than randomness, right? And we're not going to discount randomness. I'm going to come back to that. So again, koun, this idea of luck, right? Can mean luck, can mean fortune, can mean prosperity. Before I go on with this thing from Hatsumi Sensei, in Japan, right? There's a lot of lucky kind of things that are going on, right? There's, you know, fortune, whatever. If you go on one of the trips with me and we go to, go to temples, Shinto shrines and whatnot, you can get these little talismans. You can call them good luck charms. You can call them whatever you want. But some have blessings in them. Some just have a certain meaning to them, like that Maneki Neko. Right. There's this cat, right, that's kind of up on its haunches, and it looks like it's waving to you. It's not waving. It's beckoning, right? It's doing this, and this is how they do it in the East. I'm stationed in Korea, in Japan, whatnot, right? They call you over this way, right? So it's a beckoning cat. However, note for any future trip you take or shit you buy online, you will see beckoning kitties. Maneki Neko, beckoning this way. They're made for Western tourists. Do you know what you'd have to do to a cat's arm and paw to get it to do that? Okay? It's this way, right? So if you have one that's doing this, the Japanese will sell it to you, but you just bought tourist junk. Okay? It can still mean the same thing. You can make things mean whatever you want, but just know that this is the thing, right? So, but what is it beckoning? Well, again, I said I had a set, right? It's gone. I'll have to replace it, but you can get these sets and like one of the kittens is red, one's white, one's black, one's gold, one's green, one's that kind of thing, right? And each one symbolically represents the thing, like it's tuned to a certain aspect of prosperity. Okay. One could be wealth. One could be happiness. One could be health, that kind of thing. Right. By the way, the gold one is money and wealth. Right. But just generally speaking, typically they're just white. You can see black or whatever. And sometimes they have a kanji, right, on them, or they're holding a fan or some kind of placard that has the thing on it, whatever. Right. But what it is it's kind of the equivalent of a good luck charm or rabbit's foot or whatever here, right? That I am carrying this reminder that I'm kind of asking the universe, hey, you know, if you can spare some, I'll take whatever I can get. Okay. It's kind of like when somebody says they're going to pray for me, right? I don't care what their religion is. I don't care what their denomination is. Thank you. I'll take what I can get. Oh, I don't practice that. Who gives a shit? It's what they're offering and what the energy and the spirit's all about. It's kind of like people getting all freaked out around, I'm going to use the term, Christmas time, because I and my family celebrate Christmas because we live in a Judeo-Christian environment. Right. If I lived in a Buddhist region, right, we would celebrate other things. Right. But people get all freaked out because, well, that's not their thing. But the spirit in which the greeting or the blessing or the salutation was offered was non-denominational. That's just the way that person expresses it. Right? And I believe that this is what Hatsumi Sensei means by becoming the type of person that lucky things happen to. Because if we filter it out and we're only going to accept it a certain way, well, then shit, you wouldn't recognize luck or prosperity any more than you'd recognize the side of a ship if you were like right up against it and you didn't know what the hell you were looking at. Well, that's not my brand. Okay, screw you then. You don't need luck. Okay, so there's just a lot more to this. But anyway, you go to temples and whatnot, you can get these little symbols. You can get they've been called price tags hanging off my belt, but a lot of folks have these omomori, right? They're these little brocade bags, and inside there could be a picture of the primary deity of a given shrine, or it could be some kind of nature spirit. It could be something written out in kanji that was blessed by priest and whatnot and stuck in there, right? And so here's this blessing, and you can get them for different things, right? My wife and I have one that's actually came as a set. I have one, she has one, and it's for a happy, successful marriage. But you can get them for everything from like kids passing tests in school to traffic safety to, you know, whatever. Okay. But they're symbols and what I see them as, again, all these things, and I picked this up through Mikyo, is that every one of these symbols has both a kind of a higher order cosmic kind of thing and an everyday mundane thing. Okay. For example, for anybody who hasn't heard this before, in Mikyo, when we have candles or incense, right, at the Butsudan or in one of these Toronoko or whatever, right, you know, you have to light these things, okay? Well, then you need to put out the flames, right? At the end of a day or meditation or whatever, you have to, you know, extinguish the flames of the candles. When you light the incense, we tend to not use the incense that have a stick with this stuff compacted on it, because when it burns with a lot of black soot and it's very oily, right? So it's more of a powder that's been pounded into stick form. So the whole thing burns, right? And it's not as smoky. Although if you go into a Japanese temple with all the incense going on, yeah, it's smoky, right? I don't smoke. Well, don't go inside. Okay. Whatever, right? Anyway, so we don't blow out the flames, right? They're fanned, and only, like with your hand, they're fanned, and only so much to extinguish it. So you start lightly, and you may have to pick it up a little bit until the flame goes out, but the idea is you fan it out, right? Well, okay, why do we do that? Okay. Well, there's a grand spiritual woo-woo reason, right? We are avoiding imposing our will on the universe, right? We're avoiding the use of excessive force to get things done. We're doing just enough to produce the results. Okay. What's the mundane reason? Well, the mundane reason is if I blow out the candle or blow out the flame on the incense, I'm blowing wax and or ash all over the Toronoko or the Butsudan, and I have to clean that shit up. Okay? So either way, right? Now look at all the shit I have to do. Look at all this cleaning. Look at all – well, find a different way to put the candle out, right, or extinguish the flame on the – you know, but – it's not the universe's fault, because any one individual only knows one way to do something, right? Every time I do this, this happens. Well, find a different way to do it. Well, there isn't. Well, that's not how I do it. It's not how I want to do it. That's not, you know, that's not me. Well, okay, then be a different version of you, which is really what's happening all the time. Every time we go to class, every time we learn a new lesson, every time we learn a new way to use Ichimonji no Kamae, a new way to apply Mushadori, whatever, right? Guess what? We're not the same person that we were when we walked in the door. We now have more knowledge. We now have more skill. We now have a different perspective on that technique and the human body and the way things are applied and the use of energy and also habits and or misunderstandings and things like that, shit that I am carrying that gets in my way. Things that I'm doing that gets in my way. Okay? So becoming the type of person that lucky things happen to involves becoming, not clinging. Clinging is one of the 108 defilements that Mikyo says that human beings come with, and they're to be eliminated for enlightenment. Now, I was taught 108. There are three major ones. There are, depending on the lineage, seven or eight sub from there, but going through the full Mikyo process all the way through Goma, right, where you're burning away smaller and smaller and finer things that get in the way, there are 108, which is why I always tell people I need to live to 108. I didn't get started in this stuff until I was, let's see, the martial side, 19, 20, the Mikyo side, 24. I got some years to catch up for. So I've been trying to eradicate more than one a year. Right? So anyway, we'll talk about those in a bit here too. But training isn't just a learning thing. Training is a responsibility thing. And here's this other thing that I have from Hatsumi Sensei. And I'm going to read this because I think that people are more likely to take his words for it than mine. Like, I didn't get them from him or whatever. But, you know, there's always been this thing that I've noticed coming up through the ranks. You ever play the game? And there's a lot of kids' games that aren't played anymore. There's also a bunch of kids' books that aren't read anymore, or they're not read to kids, which is why I think that people are coming up with fucked up ideas about the way the world works. Okay? Like Henny Penny, right? Sky's Falling. Okay? She got hit in the head with a fucking acorn, right? And then ran around trying to convince everybody the sky was falling because of her ignorance and misunderstanding, right? And then got a whole bunch of other people to fucking run around and do crazy shit, right? So, I don't know. That doesn't sound familiar. The Emperor's New Clothes, right? Fear of being in trouble, fear of being canceled, fear of whatever, right? Oh, yeah, this naked guy walking down the street. Oh, yeah, beautiful clothing, right? Anyway, so, but there was a game called Simon Says, right? We do it with kids in class to get them to pay attention and do things. We just call it Sensei Says. But it's this... If you know the game, it's this command kind of thing, right? You're supposed to tag the person who's in charge, or no, I'm sorry, you're supposed to follow instructions, and if you screw it up or do something, when Simon doesn't say, right, then you're out kind of thing. So what it really is a game of compliance, right? The person who can follow instructions to the greatest degree out of the group that they're in, right, wins. Not a very ninja game. However, in the Bujinkan, for decades, there's been a game called Sensei Says. Soke Says. Hatsumi Sensei Says. They're just quoting from books, or they're quoting from class, or whatever. And more often than not, the he says kind of thing is out of context. But, right? Does that mean you never listen? Of course, right? But this is ninjutsu. You're supposed to validate the lesson, right? Because Hatsumi Sensei has also said, Sensei said, right? I will lie to you. How else will I know whether or not you're paying attention and you're actually validating the lessons? You know how many people have quit because he said that? I had a really good friend in this art who quit because I'm paying him, and this is his words, I'm paying him to give me the damn answers and to teach me the right stuff. I'm not playing in damn mental games. Again, this is ninjutsu. PsyOps 505, 606, right? Anyway, so Hatsumi Sensei said, the longer you train, you need to be able to drop things you don't need, okay? Things that are unnecessary, and set them aside, okay? How else do you get rid of coordination problems, balance problems, all kinds of things, right? Okay? So as you do this, you start to see that you start to see the bad parts of your own self. And you have to be able to set these things aside as well. Because if you have one bad part of yourself, still within you, everything will collapse later. And it's just the way it works, right? It's you know, like when a sculptor, right, is working in stone and stuff like that, right? We see ding, 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 and then we think that it's that last one that knocks that chip away. No. It was all of them, right? If it was going to be that one, he could just – but if he does that, how big of a piece is going to fall away, right? So if we tweak a muscle in our back, if we, I don't know, feel the knee buckle or something like that, first place my brain goes is, all right, what am I doing? Where's my posture off? Okay? Because that muscle is giving out because it's being overworked. Unless I got stabbed in the back or ran into something, why did it just happen? Because I'm wearing away at something. Right? So, again, this goes back to that personal responsibility thing. I look at me first. Right? I don't look at the kata and go, well, this kata sucks. I don't like that one. And what we really mean is I don't like that one because I can't do it immediately and awesomely. Right? Right? What do I need to do? I did a class again. We were adding that one to the tactical warrior program, right? The 0 point worksheet and I think I did a whiteboard Wednesday or something with it, right? But I just did it again, right? I've got this. I created this framework based on all these lessons. All this stuff that I create is based on the lessons. I just produce it in a framework that allows my students to get from point A to point Y or whatever faster, right? And so the 0 point worksheet is just a simple page that has 21 horizontal lines on it, okay? And the middle line next to it, to the left, is the number 0, okay? And then above it, 5 lines up, there's a plus 5, top line, plus 10, 5 lines down from 0, minus 5, down to, I didn't number them all, right? And so the point of the worksheet is that the technique, Kihon Gata, actual kata from whatever lineage or whatever, is written on the 0 point line. It's written on that line, okay? And I think I even had that line bolded. Yes, James? Okay? So that's where the technique goes. And then all of the negative lines, everything below it, are all the things that I need to get right to be able to produce that kata correctly. Just to be able to do the kata correctly. Okay? And again, do people need to do this? No. There's a 99.9% of the freaking Bujinkan population or modern Nijutsu people, 99999.99, whatever, right? They don't use it. Okay? But this helps fill things in, right? And then all the positive numbers are all the things that I need to do to work with that kata to make it street ready. It's very different, right? But what happens, what people miss in the attempt to learn things the right way is they have to learn what they need to fix, what they need to drop. This is physical. This is mental understanding. This is, I'll talk about some of the defilements here soon, but one of them is doubt, right? If I believe that I'm going to have a problem with this technique or that looks challenging or whatever, guess what? You're right. It's going to be challenging, okay? So I just get it right out of the way. I tell students, hey, we're going to work on this one. This is going to be challenging. However, when you get this, you're going to be able to do A, B, C, whatever, right? You're going to have control like you never thought possible, right? So, but anyway, we need to get rid of, we need to unlearn certain things, right? We've learned things along the way, directly, indirectly. We've learned things that we didn't even realize we learned, or we came to believe things that we didn't realize, right? That is affecting things. And I'm talking subconscious, unconscious programming, right? That we have to ferret out. Okay? And so these things are going to get in the way, right? What do we believe about this kata? What do we believe about the art? What do we believe about kata in general? They work in a fight? They don't work in a fight. What, right? All of these things, right? Not just where to step and where to put my foot. It's a whole bunch of these things, right? But anyway, let me continue on with Hatsumi Sensei's thing here, right? So part of what shugyo is, right? If you've ever heard the term shugyo, shugyo means a quest, like a journey, okay? One of the first things I was introduced to in the context of warrior training way back, right? I started this hard in 1980, right? Was the concept of a musha shugyo. Musha is warrior, shugyo is quest. Musha shugyo, right? Warrior quest. Takuma Sensei went on a warrior quest, right? He left Japan, went to China, right? Survived that, the Sea of Japan between China, like ship, more ships sank than made it back in those days, okay? Because of the rough waters and storms and all kinds of stuff, right? Made it, got into shit, whatever, right? Made it back, okay? Luck, fortune, prosperity, whatever, right? Okay? He went on a Musha Shugyo. Stephen Hayes went on a Musha Shugyo, right? He was a very high-ranking Taekwondo instructor, found this stuff and was looking into it and whatnot, went, did some research. His first trip, he went through, for anybody that cares, the book by Andy Adams called The Ninja, Invisible Assassins, right, was his impetus to go to Japan, okay? And all those people that were listed as ninja masters in that book by Andrew Adams, there's only one that was actually a ninja master, Hatsumi Sensei. The other ones, most of them were offended because, at least a couple of them were offended because the system that they trained in and studied had defenses against ninja. Their skills were about stopping ninja, right? Other ones were just self-defense instructors or whatever. So this guy, Andrew Adams, was a journalist who wrote a book to stay relevant. And here we go, right? So anyway, his first trip was just in kind of, you know, figuring this stuff out. He came back and back to this school and suddenly this had lost its luster because he did competitions, all kinds of stuff. And most people don't know, went through a divorce, sold, I think he gave the school to students or something like that, right? Everything, he got rid of everything else down to a duffel bag or two and went to Japan to live there, right? Knowing nothing about the culture, made all assumptions about moving there, how much money he was going to need, how it was going to work and all that, based on how we do things here. And well, the money that was supposed to last for a year, he was broke in 2 to 3 months and no way to get back. So he had his own shugyo, right? Hatsumi Sensei, whatever, right? So back to the quote, right? So part of that is part of what shugyo is, what training is discovering the bad parts of yourself and tossing them aside. That's what life is, not just in the dojo. End quote. Okay. Again, what the hell does this have to do with luck? Right? Well, this is part of the process of becoming the type of person that lucky things happen to. I'm not a big fan of luck, but I can't dismiss it. We'll talk about some of those in a minute. Because there's a whole other side that Hatsumi Sensei has taught on over the years and that I've discovered, and I'm sure most of you have encountered, right? That one small change in the way things are moving and this other thing happened, okay? I'll give you a for instance, and this is a two-way street because part of it is me taking control of what I can control, but me also recognizing that there is something that goes out into the world when one takes positive, directed action that almost creates a boomerang effect. Okay? We have sayings in the West here, what goes around comes around, right? You get back what you put out, right? You get out of something what you put in it, all those kind of things, right? So here's what I found. And James, I don't know, he's recognized it. Maybe he just patronizes me and smiles and nods. But I have noticed that when I take direct action at like promoting the school, or I just dive headfirst into, you know, publishing articles, putting out videos and all that kind of stuff, right? I'm gonna be starting a new series of ads for the Academy this week. If it runs anything like things that have happened in the past, we get results back from the ads. We get leads. There's no denying that. But what also happens is a butt ton of people end up contacting us, either through Facebook or through email or through phone, inquiring about classes. And they didn't see the ad. Right? And we know this because the system that we have in place for information calls or in interacting with people that are interested in classes, there's a question. How'd you hear about us? And then there's a whole bunch of check boxes that we have based on the most common things. And I have an other line just in case, right? At least half of these people that contact us drove by how many times, saw the sign, heard about us, and finally decided they were going to act on things or whatever, right? But what it is they've been thinking about it for a while. They knew we were around. They've driven by the school. They were going to do it before. Life got in the way, whatever. And see, is this coincidence? Is this luck? Is it whatever that all of these people, where last week, the week before, whatever, phone hasn't rung, maybe somebody contacted us but didn't do anything or whatever. But when I put that energy out and I put that intent out that we're looking for new students, we get new students. But not just from the ads, right? There's a huge uptick in incidental contact, incidental outreach from people who just decided now would be a good time. Okay? So, luck, coincidence, I don't know. I'll take it, right? For those of you who are on live and you're watching video, I apologize for those of you who are not, on audio only, right? I'm going to make a mudra here. This is one of the 9 kuji, right? This outer bonds fist. Okay. Whenever shit like that happens, or I'm driving toward a red light, right? And I just get this weird feeling that it's going to turn green. There's no point in even slowing down. And sure enough, click, turns green. I can just keep on going, right? The first safe moment I have to be able to do it, I recall that, hold it in my head, and make this fist. There's an inner bonds fist as well, right? That's knotted ropes, but either one of these, right? I'll do these because they have to do with a connection with something bigger, right? And it's not, see, I can't say that I didn't control the light. I can't say that I don't know. I just know that over the years and having connected with this stuff, and it's in the training, that I now know what that feeling is and how that's different from a mental, on a negative side, we might call it paranoia or a wishful thinking or whatever, right? There's some kind of connection, right? But I'll make this mudra, right? What I have discovered over time is that when I set my sights on, let's say I'm going to be going to Japan and things are a little rough. I need to, you know, get money flowing. I need to make things happen, whatever. As soon as I start proactively doing those things, like money starts coming from unexpected directions, like a refund check comes in. I don't mean a government refund check, but I get a rebate check from someplace. I just got something 2 weeks ago, class action suit involving banks that were processing Visa and MasterCard payments between 2004 and 2019, and they were illegally charging an additional fee, or they were inflating one of these fees, right? And then this multi-billion dollar class action suit, and our stuff was in there because I had processed payments during that time and had been charged these fees. Go to this one site, fill this thing out. Here's your thing. Here's how much you paid. Of course, you won't get all that because there's all these people in this class action thing. But I just did a simple little thing like, okay, if all of these people know about it, because there's like over 12 million merchants that did this stuff, right? So if all of them know about it, they all file, and I just divide down from there. That's a couple of bucks. It's a couple of bucks. It's worth me filling out the claim, sending it off. Won't hear about it until May, somewhere between May and July. But as far as the check getting cut and sent to me, sorry, I count that as money coming to me in unexpected ways. Okay, I'm going to get a refund on something that I had no idea was even operating. But does that mean that it just popped out of thin air? No, there was all this shit going on in the world that involved me. I didn't know anything about. But I'll accept it. Okay. So there's just, we don't need, I was almost going to say we need to. I'm not telling you that you need to do anything, right? To make progress in this direction, one who's interested enough to follow it. See how I said interested enough? Because there's a difference between interest and commitment, right? Committed to see it through. We have to recognize that we're a part of any equation of anything that affects us, positive or negative. Okay? If we eliminate certain things, if we eliminate things, inhibitors, limitations, whatever. Hatsumi Sensei's lessons early, very early on in this training was to become a no limits person, to return to a state of zero. That doesn't mean empty like in Zen. Okay. It means full potential. Right? You're empty of preconceived notions, whatever. You can be anything. Okay. No, I can't. I'm stuck. Well, you're stuck because you believe you're stuck. Okay. It doesn't mean that you're going to build the Taj Mahal this lifetime around. But you could certainly have a house that's not falling down, or you could have you know, whatever. Right. So anyway, so let's take a look at some of these inhibitions and these limiters and things that, that can get in the way. And I'm just going to focus on mental things. Okay. Because in all honesty, they're the easiest things to change. They're the easiest things to work on. Okay. For any of you that have gone through my, instructor training course, right? Which I guess we should release that again sometime soon, James, huh? I think it's like a 15, 16 week course. One of the first exercises that people go through, that instructor candidates go through, is one that helps them reframe themselves as to how or how quickly students make progress. And if we don't take everything into account, we could think that some people are falling behind, some people are never going to make it, when actually they're making huge strides in a whole different area. And it's that area that's going to keep them in training through all the challenges. Okay. So what we'll do is I'll have a whiteboard and I'll say, start naming some character traits of leaders or of a successful person or of a black belt. I'll just pick one of these topics, right? Somebody that's uber successful, right? A master, whatever. And they'll start naming things, right? And some things could be, you know, they know techniques. Okay, good, right? They're really skilled at verbal communications or written communications. So those things go down, right? They have a grand vision about whatever. They're not lazy, so they're proactive, whatever, right? So we'll list all these things. That's step one. Step two is we'll go back through the list and we're going to mark them. They get marked. Each of these line items get marked with an A for attitudinal, right? Is this an attitudinal quality, right? Or an S for a hard skill, right? Like they're going to have to learn some stuff. They're going to have to practice it. They're going to have to develop it that way, okay? And what they find is that, what, James, 70 to 80% of the line items have A's next to them, right? Mm-hmm. And what that means is that, right, most of these qualities are all about attitude, all about mental state, all about perspective. And those things are the easiest to change. They're the easiest to make progress in. Because the other stuff's going to take hard time, right? Because you need to study, you need to practice, you need to develop the skill, that kind of thing. But perspective, attitude, right? It's all different, right? So in Mikyo, these things are known as defilements. The Sanskrit word is kleshas, right? They're mental states that cloud the mind, right? And so what I'm going to share now are things that Hatsumi Sensei was alluding to, that through training, you discover these bad parts about yourself, right? Stiffness, rigidity, lack of balance, posture sucks, whatever. That's just a place to start, right? What about attitude? What about procrastination? What about laziness? What about having a good enough perspective, right? Which usually means just enough to squeak by the test because all I care about is getting the next belt, right? Okay. Again, remember what he said. This is about life, not just in the dojo, okay? So are we expecting miracles? We want to become a martial arts master, but meanwhile, on the job, I'm doing just enough to not get fired. Because as the Chinese say, the way we do anything is a really good indicator about the way we do everything. Okay? Because this is not about becoming somebody who knows a bunch of techniques. This is about becoming somebody who has control over the world and can produce results with less and less effort. Because we're not just battling people who are throwing punches. We're battling insults. We're battling confusion. We're battling misinformation. We're battling, right, the ability or the, we're battling the inability to get where we need to go or do something. Like this opportunity pops up and I can't grab it. This seminar popped up. This online training popped up. This vacation opportunity with my friends popped up or whatever. And I can't because I I don't have any control over those. I'm off balance in my life. I am in a defensive posture on a daily basis. Right? It's just not the same. So anyway, these defilements, these kleshas, right? The main three are greed, hate, and delusion. Right? I'm just going to name them. We're not making any value judgments. This episode is nothing about these things in general. I'm just naming some. And I'm certainly not doing 108, right? I'm only going to throw out a couple more, right? So the main three are greed, hate, and delusion, right? Greed is typically I want something for nothing, right? Or whatever I have, I want more of, okay? Hate is, right, ill will toward anything that does not toe the line, go my way, follow my script, or whatever, right? And delusion is not the same as illusion. Illusion is something that somebody puts up in front of you, right? You can learn to see through those kind of things, right? Delusion, that's self-imposed, okay? It's false beliefs, right? Other ones include conceit, wrong views, doubt, restlessness, right? Can't focus, can't sit still, whatever. Shamelessness, right? There's no thought about perceptions or whatever. I'm just going to do whatever I do, dress the way I dress, whatever, right? I'm going to carry myself whatever way I want. People can kiss my ass. I don't care. Well, then when you need things from other people, it's not luck or not luck or them choosing to shit on you or whatever. If we've created a perception in them that we're the type of person that can't be trusted, is going to make them look bad, whatever, right? On our memberships at the school, there's a line at the bottom before somebody signs to sign up. And yes, I use those because for people first getting started, that is a tool for getting them to understand the power of their word. Okay. It has never ceased to amaze me how many people, and again, this is where there's that interest and commitment, where they say they're going to do whatever they need to get to mastery, but they want to have the option to quit at any time. Makes no sense. I'm sure it does to them, because that's part of delusion. Anyway, but we're not that way, right? We're all enlightened. So shamelessness, recklessness, those kind of things, right? These are all part of this process of ferreting out baggage that we carry. It's part of our habit patterns, and these are just mental, right, that get in the way, that prevent us from getting where we want. Okay? So anyway, luck. Let's get back to luck. Let's stop talking about these things because I didn't mean for it to go in this direction this far. But let's go back to luck, one more form of luck from a warrior's perspective. Okay? And I think this was the focal point of that Komiosai year where we were focused on Kōgun, right? And this is the idea of being open to shit happening, because you can only control so much. But if you've ever been like in the middle of a technique or whatever, and your partner punched or they reached out to do something or whatever, and you shifted or thought about shifting or whatever, and you just happened to move because you were looking at one thing, completely missed the fact that they were punching or whatever, and they missed. Luck, right? If you've ever been out in the world, right? Just had somebody tell me about this the other day. They were walking down a sidewalk, and somebody was, what were they doing? They were, I put a chainsaw or something, and they were cutting this branch off a tree, and everything was falling into this yard, so it was nowhere close to him or whatever, and he was outside the safety rope and all that they had set up and all that, right? And for whatever reason, this one branch that this guy was cutting, he didn't make it all the way through, and it snapped, and then the fibers from the branch kind of caught, and this thing spun around and dropped outside this safety area right where he had been walking. And he was like 15 steps away, right? Now think about this. If at any point leading up to that moment in time, he stopped to tie his shoe, he stopped to scroll on his phone, he, what, looked at something, changed his pace, anything, he could have been right there when that, so was he lucky? Or, again, see, the association with luck is different. But the point was, we accept it for what it is. Okay? Things came together, either produced a positive result or a negative result. But it's not that it happened. It's what we're going to do with it now that it's happened. And see, here's the difference. For many in the West, because of that randomness idea, right? Negative stuff, people tend to hold on to, get shit on, whatever. Okay? Positive stuff, they're gonna take it, wow, that was lucky, and they're gonna blow it or whatever, but they never stop to think about how it might have happened, how it might have come together. Okay? Because if this is something I can control, or this is something I can reproduce, why would I not do that? Okay? But in the East, there's activity that goes along with it, right? There's no luck without activity. So if there was a fortuitous thing, so they may say the gods or the Buddhas were on their side. They may say the universe helped them. They may say, and they may even think, now what good can I do with this? Right? Even negative stuff, what good can come in this? But again, if you've been to Japan, one of the things that you'll see at Shinto shrines, Buddhist temples and whatnot, it's a little bit different. Sometimes you could be in one complex and it's actually combined, but, you can give a donation. And again, that, like I said, they have all these fortune kind of things, right? One of them is a canister, and I have one around here somewhere. Maybe it's still packed up because I still haven't unpacked everything from fire recovery and whatnot. But there's like a canister, and it has what looks like wooden chopsticks in it. Okay. And those chopsticks have a symbol or a number or whatever. And so you give a donation, you shake this thing a certain number of times, 7, 8, whatever, and then you shake it out, and this one stick protrudes, and you pull it. There's the number. And then there's like a little stack of drawers, whatever, with the corresponding symbol or number, and you pull it, and you pull this little rolled out fortune, right? And you open it up, and you read it, right? If it's a good fortune, you keep it, right? You tuck it away. You carry it with you. Okay. But if it's a bad one, and I see people doing this kind of thing in Chinese restaurants, right? Whether it's good or bad, they have a chuckle, they crumble it up, they toss it into the trash, and it's a done deal. Okay. I don't do that. I do the Japanese thing. So, if it's a bad thing, and sometimes it's not that, sometimes it's, well, up, give you another one here in a minute, but there is we'll just stop with that one, right? So from my experience at Shinto shrines, there tends to be, almost looks like a clothes rack, right? There's this wooden rack with these little wooden slats or really thin dowels that go across, right? And so at Buddhist temples, and it could be switched too. I haven't been to every one, so whatever. There is usually a tree, and you can identify it because there are these strips of paper that are tied around the really little branches or twigs. Okay? And so that's where all the bad fortunes go. Okay? Because the belief is that the winds, you hang that up, you tie it up here, so the wind blows that negative fortune away from you. Again, there's still this activity, right? There's something to be done to move this away, right? This is not something I want to hold on to. It's not something I want to keep. And if I'm not going to keep a damn piece of paper in my wallet, my purse, my pocket, or whatever, why the hell am I going to keep it in my head? Why am I going to carry this around with me? This happened when I was 10. It just proved to me that I suck or I can't get ahead in the world or what, or at 10 a.m. this morning, whatever. People just carrying shit with them, right? But anyway, there's this mechanism, right? And again, it's a belief system, but so's most of the stuff we operate by. What I believe myself to be, what I believe I'm worthy of, what I believe that I'm capable of, right? So why not believe that the wind can blow bad shit away from you? Okay? I believe that people will like me more if I take a shower on a regular basis. Is that true? I don't know. I haven't tried the other thing. And when I didn't take a shower on a regular basis, I was in the military, and we were all funky, so we couldn't smell each other. So, but there's this mechanism for blowing the negative stuff away, right? In the Shinto shrines, and again, sometimes in Buddhist shrines, you can buy these plaques, these little plaques, right? I have two in my back secondary dojo, the traditional one. I think one's hanging and the other one's just sitting up beyond. I haven't used them. I bought them and brought them with me for future use. And see, these actually have two different purposes. And sometimes it's the symbology on the plaque, because most of the plaque is blank. Right? The backside certainly is. But usually there's some imagery on there. Sometimes it's a Buddha or Bodhisattva. Sometimes it's just a picture. Sometimes it's a kanji, whatever, right? And so you can get them. I tend to get the ones that are neutral. But sometimes, like, you get one that is definitely for a fortune, right? Positive luck, prosperity kind of thing. And they have ones that are for the opposite as well. If you're trying to dispel things, you get that one. I tend to get the ones that are neutral. But here's the way they work, right? It's still the wind carrying things, okay? But I can write my name on it, or I can write somebody else's name on it that I want to extend positive prosperity to. And now it can be worked in two different directions. I can write something on there that I want to happen and let the wind carry it out into the world, and nature, karma, whatever, right, do its thing. Or I can write something on there that I want to dispel for myself or that person, okay? But either way, it's a outward-directed kind of energy kind of thing. Because remember I said part of their belief system is based on nature and cyclic, right, energy, right, cycles. And the other part is more about the hard law of cause and effect. Okay? But in Mikyo, we've got two sides to the training. Wisdom, which is based on intellect, and compassion, which is based on heart, spirit, energy. Right? You have to have both for enlightenment. Okay? Otherwise, you just have a really smart person who's cold as hell and doesn't give a shit about anybody but themselves, or you got somebody that's blissful and compassionate and they're clueless about the way things work, right? So you need to have both. There's another mudra for you. Anyway, speaking of mudra, I will be doing a free workshop here coming up, or a webinar, online webinar, to kick off the next online program, which, based on popular not consent, what am I saying? Based on what people want, right? people want me to teach on the Goshinbo, psychological self-defense, which is kind of the bridge between the Godai no Rin, power rings for adjusting inner world kind of things, and the full Kuji. So for anybody that's interested in that, keep an eye out for the emails that'll be coming. Anyway, so again, this all kind of circles back to becoming the type of person that lucky things happen to. We can either be a shit magnet or we can be a prosperity magnet. But that doesn't mean that shit won't happen to somebody who's prosperous. Okay? How do we look at it? Right? We can either take Hatsumi-sensei's example that I guess was meant to happen, right? But it's not that it happened. It's my response to how it happened. I can either light myself on fire because something bad happened and make a mountain out of a freaking molehill, or I can just keep on with my day and fix it on the fly, or right, do the next thing that's necessary. Right? Him having a meltdown because his freaking the sole of his shoe melted and his shoe came off, right, doesn't change the fact that he just needs to replace his shoe. Pissing and moaning about it and complaining and or whatever, right? How does that change anything? Well, it does change a lot, right? It's kind of like a wound that's festering. Okay? Keep at it long enough, right? It's like, doctor, this thing hurts when I touch it. Well, then stop touching it. But it hurts when I don't touch it. Yeah, it'll heal. It'll go away, right? You had to keep that wound painful and festering, keep fucking with it. Okay? Keep thinking about it. Okay? It's amazing how, like, no matter, I could be ill, right? Just talking to James about this the other day. I'm sick, not a lot, but I mean, the number of people that just kind of fold as soon as they get sniffles or whatever, right? Ill, cold, whatever. It's amazing how much that stuff goes away mentally. It goes away as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I don't know that it just doesn't just vanish, but it just mentally goes away when I get myself involved in something that requires my attention. You know, when it doesn't go away, I'm sitting around thinking about it. And then it just gets worse. Medicine doesn't work because I'm focusing on it. And even if the pain did diminish, didn't diminish in my head because I'm thinking about it and I'm waiting for the next twinge and oh, see, yep, still there. Yep. Okay. So anyway, if nothing else from the warrior side of things, right? Just he missed for whatever reason, right? He went to throw a punch and his foot slipped out from under him. Okay. I didn't control that. Okay, you're going to stand him back up again and let him take a really good shot now? Oh, dude, that shot would have landed if you didn't slip. Here, try again. No, you're going to accept it, right? So, okay. So Hatsumi-sensei's point with that focus on koun, on one side, is don't write those things off. When they happen, accept it and recognize that, shit happens. And it, okay. Another one of the phrases that we have in the instructor training program, I think it's one of the first classes, James, is everything happens for a reason and it serves me. Now, what kind of evidence do I have for that? I have no more evidence than the person who believes that shit just happens randomly and it doesn't serve me or whatever. But you know what does serve me? Believing that anything that happens to me serves me and it will either make me stronger or it will give me extra resources and benefits that I didn't have a second ago. But either way, it moves me forward. It doesn't cause stagnation and it doesn't cause me to fall back. And even something that causes me to fall back, right? In the military, we used to call that advancing in a rearward direction. Okay, I'm adjusting to the conditions, I may need to stop and wait. I may need to rest. I may need to take three steps back. But that doesn't stop me from moving forward. His point was, you can't control everything. But you can't control anything from a negative state. You can't control everything. And sometimes, just that lucky shot. Right? The bullet that gets you, you never hear. That doesn't mean that you don't not take action, take cover or whatever, but maybe you are behind cover. And the one that gets you ricocheted off two things before it tagged you. Well, there's a negative, but that doesn't make me not train. Just like that whole year and a half that I couldn't get to my teacher. Military things, all kinds of things that were going on. That didn't stop me from training. That didn't stop me from doing the things I could do as a solo training student. Just like, well, I lost that training partner again. Now I guess I can't train. Bullshit. There's always something that I can do. I mean, for Christ's sake, we're in Nijutsu. There's, what can you not do? Unless you've only focused on physical skills, in which case, then shadow box it. Again, difference between interest and commitment. But again, I wanted to cover just a little bit on this idea of luck. Because if there's anybody out there that, you know, needed to hear it or was just thinking that, you know, universe is against them, luck's against them, whatever, whatever. Okay. But I do find that the more you tune in and the more you focus a certain way, the more I have to say that my teachers are right. It's okay, was right. The more I become a certain type of person, the more I attract things that work. And maybe I'm not attracting things as much as I'm just tuned into and the way I look at things. You know, turn shit into gold. Which reminds me, there's a good luck symbol in Japan that you can find in the tourist shops that is a golden lump of shit. It's just shit, man. Really? Pretty sure it's fertilizer. I'm pretty sure that if you can recognize that, and everything that you're doing is to avoid that or to get around it or not be affected by it or to recognize that it's natural, whatever, everything changes. Okay. So ultimately this goes to mindset. Okay. So instead of seeing luck as random and there's nothing you can do about it and you're either your number's up or it isn't, I don't know that that's not true either. But at the same time, what I do know is that the way we look at things, the way we see things, determines our view of reality and determines what your capabilities are. Anyway, I think I've gone at this enough. We'll stop beating the lucky horse. James, questions, comments?
Dave said earlier, trust but verify. And then he just threw out the Golden Poop Award.
Did he just give me an award? Is that what you just said? He just
says Golden Poop Award.
You know, you need to go on one of these trips with me. I will award you with the, won't even worry about buying your own souvenir. I'll get it for you. Anyway, Dave, it's all good. All right. Is that it? It's just him?
Well, that was it. And Jimmy, Richard, and Julie all popped in and said hello as well.
Hola, hello. Depending on where you are in the world, where I am right now, konbanwa. All right. So don't forget, next week, next Monday, is our 200th episode. This was 199. So thanks to a lot of you for sticking this out. It's got some kind of either it has value because you're learning something, or it has value because you're telling somebody else in your life, oh, no, I got to be on for this podcast. It's crazy guys talking. Spring camp, April 26th, 27th, and 28th. Theme is the elements of mastery. If you go to onlineninjaacademy.com/events, we're going to have to cycle the Shuriken thing out. I just noticed that that's still there from Shuriken workshop from last week. So the next event down is spring camp, and there's a little graphic there and a bullet list of the things that I plan on covering, topics and whatnot. And I'm still getting things in from guest instructors, so we'll be adding to the list as I know what they're going to be covering. I think that's it. So, yeah. Anything else?
No, sir.
Nope. All right. Well, in that case, thank you for joining in. I hope this was valuable in some way. And if nothing else, it'll keep you coming back. All right. That's it. I'll talk to everybody again next time on Kuden.
Get more of Kuden Radio. Subscribe through your favorite podcasting site or join our clan of serious modern warriors at onlineninjaacademy.com.